For me, classic Kansas. It's great to have the band back with a new album, and it's great to have them touring. And I'm sure you're going to enjoy the full concert performance a little later in the week. But we're going to have a Q&A session, and there's going to be people out in the audience if you've got any questions for the guys. They're going to play you a short set. This is kind of a bit of a bonus for you. They're going to play you 5 songs acoustically. And yeah, it's pretty good. I heard them soundchecking earlier. And what they're going to do is come out now, and they're going to play the 5 songs, and then we're going to have the Q&A. So would you please welcome Kansas?
Doing up so early. As the dew turns into frost, there is something that I hope will not be lost. The leaves will change, they'll start to fall. I still wonder if it mattered much at all when my world starts to fade. I can only hope that every choice I make will endure and carry on into the coming dawn. The breezes blow, soft clouds drift by, like some artist's canvas capturing my eyes. I am sure I'm holding fast. I am dying for a lifetime that will last. But when my world starts to fade, I'm still hoping this foundation that I made will endure and carry on into the coming dawn. We're so close, yet never touch. Can there be a love that changes me this much? I can't see, eyes open wide. Yet I'll never doubt you're standing by my side. When my I can only hope that every choice I make will endure and carry on into the coming
for just showing up this early in the morning. We like to live by a guiding set of principles. One is that rock and roll should never be played before 12 noon. So anyway, thank you guys for coming out this morning. We got a song. This is from the Audio Visions album. This is called Hold On. Here we go.
Just what you see. What have the years of your life taught you to be? Innocence dying in so many ways. The things that you dream of are lost, lost in the haze. Hold on, baby, hold on. 'Cause it's closer than you think, and you're standing on the brink. Hold on, baby, hold on. 'Cause there's something on the way. Your tomorrow's not the same as today. Don't you recall what you felt when you were done? Someone who stood by your side, a face you've known. Where do you run when it's too much to bear? Who do you turn to with me when nobody's there? Hold on, baby, hold on. 'Cause it's closer than you think when you're standing on the brink. Hold on, baby, hold on. 'Cause there's something on the way. Your tomorrow's not the same as today. Oh.
Thank you and good night. I'm going to take a drink of water after that one.
Some of you may know me, and many of you won't. I am just a player in a band. Some of you will listen, and some of you will hear. Some of you may laugh at me, and some of you will cheer. But all of us, we are in audience. Help it all make sense. Have we left the answers far behind? Are we running from the light? And our legs are growing weaker, chasing shadows in the night. Tell me how the world is, it's hard as all in. The waves are crashing all around, the shore is wearing thin. The message in the bottle has been lost at sea. And the words live on forever, it's meant to be. Have we left the answers far? To the opposite side. I say, everything's easy. It's
now.
Don't hang on. Nothing lasts forever, my fear than sky. Let's get away. And now your body will never leave my mind. Just in the wind. All we are is dust in the wind.
All we are is dust in the wind.
Dust in. Everything is dust.
Thanks, guys. That was great, wasn't it? People weren't expecting that. Well, let's be honest, we weren't expecting that. I guess we've got to bring on the gentleman who's been missing from that, Bill Earhart. As you know, a Q&A means that I'll ask some questions with the guys in the band. And where's Tyler?
I'm over here, buddy. House right.
Okay, I got you. There's that gentleman over there, Tyler. He is going to be... coming to you, if you've got a question, what I'll say if you've got a question, if you have it, yes, not now, please. Don't peek too early. You're obviously a man who's had too much coffee this morning. Here, Tyler will come to you with the microphone and you ask the question and it'll be fine. If it's a question the band don't like, we'll have you taken outside and thrown overboard. I'm kidding. You'll be shot. And we'll just take it like that. First of all, guys, thank you for that short set, very nice. And I guess we're going to be talking about this. How many people out there have got this album? Probably you didn't, because I do expect all hands in the air. Okay. And these guys are going to be playing, I think they're playing one and possibly two songs from that album in their full set a little later this week. But they are playing Left Overture. Come on, guys. First of all, thank you for appearing on Cruise to the Edge. It's great to have you guys on board. We did want you last year, actually. I have to say, I did sort of try and get you on last year, but you were a little busy, which is good for you. I suppose I'd better start with Phil and work our way down. I'm not going to say this is a rebirth, because it isn't. It's a continuation. It's, you know, Kansas don't need a rebirth. They've been going for however. And I know it's easy for the press to say, hey, it's a rebirth. It's not. This is a continuation. But what I will say is, from the minute I heard this album, I just thought, 2 seconds in, classic Kansas. So, Phil, perhaps you can tell us how the sort of genesis, if you like, of the album began. I mean, obviously, bringing in, I know, there's a connection as well, because he played on a Steve Hackett album many years ago. When Ronnie came into the band, was that the sort of primary thought, that we need to get an album recorded, yeah?
Well, it's a real different time for us, because we had just lost our lead singer, Steve Walsh, who had been with us for many, many years. Yeah. And Richard and I kind of looked at each other and went, well, now what do you want to do? Yeah. Now, we're not dead yet. What Phil Collins says, you know, but it was one of those things that we had to, between he and I, decide that either we're moving on or we're not, and it was a no-brainer. It was the kind of thing that we knew we had already had, you know, Billy and Rags, and we had a great formation of a band, and we just needed to get another singer, which was no small feat, you know. So through a number of things, you know, different... Beg your pardon?
Are you saying I have small feet?
Something about small hands, I don't know. Sorry, political joke, sorry. Anyway, so we decided to move on, and we did find Ronnie, and we brought Dave Mannion, who had been our lighting guy for close to 20 years. So it was a formation that happened quickly, and we decided to go into the studio, unbeknownst that our secret weapon was going to be producing our record. We had no idea that Zach Grisby could write the way that he writes, and we knew he could play great. So we get into the studio, we start working, and we're working on Zach's songs, and Rich looks at me, and I look at Rich, and we kind of go, why is this guy not in the band? You know, and so I took him out in the parking lot, and I said, you want to join up? And he goes, yeah, let's do it. So that was it, and that's where we've ended up today. We went ahead and made the album, but that's how it happened, piece by piece.
Okay, Ronnie, got to go to you next. What was it like for you coming in to Kansas? Because that
piece of cake.
Yeah, but it's always the emphasis, and obviously everybody's eyes is on the lead vocalist. And coming in to a long established band is never easy for anybody. But coming in as a front man is like really almost sometimes the poison chalice. In this instance, I'm happy to say it wasn't. I mean, because you really picked the ball up and ran with it. But, I mean, how was it for you? I mean, when you were asked, how did you feel?
More like one of those little cakes in the toilet.
You mean that's not a mention? All this time. You know, it was really bad timing, and I have to tell this story, because right before I joined the band, right before our first rehearsal, I happened to see the VH1 Behind the Music with Lawrence Gowan, who took Dennis DeYoung's place in Styx. Yeah, yeah. You know, I'm a Chicago boy, so I'm close to the Styx guys, you know? And Lawrence was talking about how he was even in the band a year, and people in the audience were going, where's Dennis, you know? And I'm thinking, oh my God, what did I get myself into? I'm taking over for Steve Walsh. They're gonna lynch me. So, but I just tried to put that behind me, and yeah. Me and Manny got our first show behind us, and it's been smooth sailing ever since, so it's been exciting.
In fairness, though, I mean, there had been a previous vocalist in Kansas as well, so it's not the first time that Kansas had changed vocalists, so really it was a little easier than it would be for most, I guess, but I get what you're saying about replacing Steve, who we all love as well. We've got to say, we all love Steve Walsh. He's a great artist. Billy,
just so we know, we've sailed out of Tampa yesterday, and Robbie Steinhardt called me and then said to say hello to everybody and say his best for you guys in the band and the fans as well. So Robbie's doing that and still kicking and still making music. So
you've been in the band a long time as well.
I'm a new guy. I've been here for 32 years.
Yeah, not bad. 32 and a newbie still. When the album was finished, how did you feel about going out on the road with the album? I mean, because it's a really, really strong album.
Well, yeah, it's some really difficult material to play as well. I mean, some of the songs are very involved and very, it's not easy, so it took some rehearsal, but we were very excited about it, to have new material. It'd been the one song that we started with, The Coming Dawn, that song was recorded back in the year 2000 and released in 2000. That was the last original material studio album that we had released, so it's been a long time. So it was really refreshing to have something new to play, something to talk about, and you know, and get out there and promote, and hopefully give something new to the fans as well.
Rich, we spoke when we did a radio interview back in the UK. You said that it's the first album for a long time. And obviously there must have been a lot of really good material for the album for consideration, but there's always that, must be at the back of your mind thinking, God, it's been a long time. How are we going to start approaching this? What was the, if you like, how did it sort of move through from the very early days of recording the album?
Well, I think we wanted to approach it as Kansas albums traditionally have had a lot of variety. We've never been one thing. There's a lot of ups and downs, dynamics, acoustic things,
more rock things, not all progressive stuff. And we wanted to continue on with that to make a quintessential Kansas album. And me and Philip have been around through our entire history, so we had a pretty good view of it. And making this record, it was a bit respective in looking back, just to make sure that we knew what course we were going to follow. We wanted to represent that all of that of Kansas, and I think we did a good job in from the album cover to the artwork to the writing material to all of it. We covered all those bases, and that was very important to us in material selection. Was we needed to be all the things that Kansas has been.
Okay. You guys have been on tour just prior to Cruise to the Edge. You've been doing a few, you were doing a few dates. I remember you saying you were about to go out at the end of last year, and you're performing Left Overture, which I'm sure pleases that lot out there. You also said, Rich, that it's some of the, is it one or two of the songs on Left Overture had never been performed live?
Questions of My Childhood is a song we never did. So fortunately for me, there's not really a lot of guitar work on it, so it was pretty easy to learn. But me and Zach wanted to do something, so we created parts just to keep busy and stay out of the way. We don't want to turn it into a different song, but it really is a joy to play that album in its entirety in the sequence it was recorded. It's interesting for me because I don't know about a lot of guys in bands, but I don't sit down and put on a record and play them front to back all the time. So it's like, yeah, I've forgotten the sequence probably soon after it came out. And it's very interesting to hear it and to be performing it and to see the people in the audience that haven't heard all of this and singing along with it all is an experience that we have in 44 years have never had in doing that. And that's what we're going to continue this year. Playing the new songs, all of Left Overture, and then we have another hour of other stuff we got to do. So
yeah.
We prepare, the set we do on the Left Overture tour is about 2.5 hours.
Wow.
Which is, I watch a bunch of old guys, but it's just fun.
Phil, the Left Overture, and certainly for me, Point of No Return, those two albums were very, very important for me as a fan. What do you think it is about those two albums, but particularly Left Overture, that really sort of pulls people in after all this time still?
Well, it's a good question. I think you have to look kind of the previous three albums, from the first Kansas album to Song for America to Mask. I think we were building towards Left Overture. I think Carrie was writing towards that album. And if you ask Carrie what his favorite Kansas album is, he will tell you that it's Left Overture. And it was a time period where we were just sitting at rehearsals every day just wondering what he was going to bring. And, you know, one day he'd walk in with The Wall, and then the next day he'd come in with Cheyenne Anthem, and then the next day. And on the last day of rehearsals, he came in with Carry On Wayward Son. That song almost didn't make it on the album. So it's the kind of thing that I'm never quite sure what it is on any album that everybody likes that makes it so special, but I can tell you from the guys that were sitting there at the time, Carrie wrote in such a way that he was never to repeat, but he would tell you, that he wrote at a time and wrote those songs that really captured something he'd been working towards the previous three albums. And I would say, to answer your question, it would be a sort of a magical time period of Carrie writing those songs that captured a sound of Kansas that we've been working on, and the leftover, and then going into Point of No Return kind of captured a lot of that too. And then with Left Overture, I think to most of us is probably one of the pinnacles of our musical career.
Right place, right time then, I guess.
Yeah, and of course Wayward Son didn't hurt, having that song rip across radio the way it did. And we kind of thought it was a hit, but we weren't really sure because it was us. You know, and I mean, if it would have been another band, we would have thought, God, that's just a smash. But since it was us, you know, who knows? So.
Well, the other thing about, radio presenters, because I'm one, we hate it when we can't talk. And it's like straight in with the vocals, just like, I can't talk over this. Which is what it was, that's the way it was done back in the day. So, but it is, I remember the minute I heard that record and I thought, oh yeah, I get this. I'll go and listen to the album now. But I think a lot of people were like that. But and that was a big hit for you in the UK as well. So we loved that, particularly over there. And I think Left Overture is probably the album in the UK everybody remembers you for. Do you mind if we ask these people out here to contribute some questions? Okay, if you want to put your hand up. This guy down here, Rogue D, Tyler, he caught my eye first.
From 1974 to 77, I worked for Don Kirshner's rock concert. And I just, we have the Archies, the Monkees, and Kansas all on Don Kirshner records. I'm curious, how did you get Don Kirshner to find you guys?
Well, we actually sent out a little reel-to-reel tape that we had made in a studio. Was it in Liberal Ridge, Liberal, Kansas?
It was in Liberal, Kansas.
Yeah, we made it in Liberal, Kansas, wherever that is. But we went there and recorded, and we put six songs, three songs on one side and three songs on another. It's a small little spool. I'm sure all of you have seen it. But it's the kind of thing that we were told that Don Kirshner was looking for, going to start a label, and he was looking for bands. So we sent that off and to an engineer who took it over there and put it on the desk, and he called us and said that there was about over 100 tapes before ours, and the lady said, probably won't hear from us, but thanks anyway. So we knew the tape had been placed. That's how our music got to Don Kirshner. He eventually listened. I asked him later what he thought of all six songs, and he said, what six songs? And he only listened to one side. So he didn't listen to the other side, which was great, because one of the songs was called Big Breasted Woman.
Stay away from me.
That's the truth. If Steve was here, he'd probably kick me for saying that. But anyway.
He wrote this.
Yeah. Love you, bro. Love you. Anyway, so that's what happened. We were in Liberal, Kansas, and Wally Gold tracked us down and called us and said, like what we've heard, love the violin. We want to send somebody out to see you guys. And that's when we had the free beer concert and all that kind of stuff. So, but we only got one shot. We only got one shot, and it was with Don Kirshner. And, of course, none of us would be sitting here right now without Don Kirshner. Rest his soul.
Okay, another question. Put your hand in the air. Yeah, anybody? Here you go, Dan. Tyler, down here. There you go. You have to come round and then... It's a bit of a trick. Can I ask a question? Obviously, the violin in rock bands, I mean, we had The Flock and we had... I can't remember that. A David LaFlamme's band. Beautiful day. It's a beautiful day. I mean, it's not a usual instrument. So, David, what's it like being in a band where it's kind of a featured thing? I mean, it's a rock band with a featured thing. I mean, how do you sort of approach working with a rock band?
It's a lot of fun. No, you just push me out of the spotlight. I try to approach it as a rock instrument, so I play guitar as well.
Okay.
So try to, instead of being too florid and classical, but with enough of that to still be a violin, but borrowing from guitar presentation.
Well, it fit. I have to say that the violin, you never think that it's an unusual instrument as part of the Kansas lineup, which is obviously means it's integrated well, but I get the classical bit. But are there times when you really want to rock out, which is violence?
Yeah.
I mean, it's not always the easiest thing to rock out with unless you're sort of in ELO doing Rollover Beethoven, I guess. But
there are songs like Down the Road that are, I mean, they're boogies, you know, and you can't be, and you can't be all pretty and florid and all that with it, you know.
I love that word, florid. It's great, isn't it? What a great word, florid. No, and I get what you said.
I have my moments.
Well, absolutely. Listen, everybody should at least have one moment a day. Okay, we're down. Here's the question.
Hi, guys. You guys rock. And I actually had a question for Billy and Ronnie. I was wondering if you could describe your vocal technique and your vocal warm-up. How do you get to the point where you could hit those notes and they're reliable every single night? I mean, because they're so outside of the range of what normal...
Here's what Ronnie does. Seriously, that's his warm-up.
Have you been standing outside my bathroom again?
Go ahead, Ronnie.
That's actually it, you know, just when you first get going, I just do low hums and then eventually just start working up the pitch until I'm screaming, driving him crazy, and warming it up slowly but surely. So it's something to consciously do before, you know, before going out and singing a song like Opus Insert, where you're in the stratosphere there.
I had one vocal lesson when I was in college. I went to a vocal professor, and he taught me that the most important thing is in the breathing, is while you're singing. And God blesses you with a range. I mean, you can develop to a certain point, but you know, it's just a God-given thing. You have it or you don't, I guess. Can develop it to a certain point, but it's just in the breathing and the technique, and I don't know how I've maintained the range that I have, having smoked for 35, 40 years, that's it. Thank you. Thank you for your question.
Thank you.
Okay, there's two guys here. The guy in the white t-shirt first, okay? Him first, and then you next, sir, okay?
Hi, guys. In your 45-year career, there's been a lot of changes in musical taste and what the public want, what the public don't want. Is there any point where you thought that Kansas wasn't relevant or that people perhaps didn't want to hear what you were doing?
Well, we were told that by our manager and our record company back in 1991 after the, In the Spirit of Things, yeah. Said, well, we're sorry, we can't book you guys anymore. People are going, and we won't have to drop you from the label. So we have been told that. But, you know, you just persevere. Thank God, you know, a German promoter took a chance and said, come on over, I want to book you guys for a couple of week tour in Germany. And we went over and did that tour and just kept right on going. Had Dave Hope and Kerry Livgren as well rejoin the band for that particular tour. And just the fact that Kansas was such a live performance band and developed such a great group of fan base over the years that have been just loyal to the bone. And so thank you guys so much for that. So that's the main reason we're this way around.
Okay, it's this guy here in the black t-shirt.
In 2004, you guys played at a casino in Hankinson, North Dakota.
Very precise.
Well, trust me, you did. The casino hired a lighting company out of Minneapolis, and they hired me. So I was wondering if Dave would like to sign his lighting plot from there.
I was kind of worried where that was going. Yeah. For a second. And here's a writ. It's like, it kind of happens like that. You didn't pay. Phil, what? There's been a lot of changes in the band over the years. This is the original band, of course, which we all love. But what exactly does it take to be in Kansas? Because obviously you're a founding member of Riches as well. You must have an idea of the kind of person you're looking for to bring into the band.
Boy, that's a really good question. I don't think I've ever been asked that as to what it takes. You're right, we started out with the original six, and then certain people dropped out at certain times. Thank God nobody dropped out all at the same time. So, but, you know, Richard and I have always been there. As he said earlier, we have a fairly good focus because most of these guys we've known. David Ragsdale just bugged the hell out of me to be in this band. I mean, he would send me these cassettes all the time. You know, this is me playing, you know, this is me, and this is me, and this is me. And I was going, this guy's really great, but it was at the time that we had Steve Morris in the band, so we didn't, you know, we didn't really, I won't say we didn't need a violinist, but the band was kind of going in a different direction. But when we had a chance to, for David to work with Carrie and myself, I think it was on the box set of some sort, David came and played, and Richard and I both went, this is great, we got to have a violin back again. So lots of times, it just happens by chance, doors open. You know, Steve Walsh and Billy kind of came together.
Yeah, I came in on Steve's coattails when he came back to the band. I actually joined Steve in the band Streets.
Yeah, which had English guy playing guitar.
Yeah, I remember
from Birmingham. We used to be in a band called City Boy.
Yes. But see, there's a story about Billy. See, Billy doesn't know the whole story.
Uh-oh.
It was a warm summer's night
in Greece. We were on the beach in San Diego. No. It was the kind of thing that we had other bass players in mind. And Billy always thought that he came in on Steve's coattails, but he did not. He earned his way into this band. He did. And I wanted you to know that, because you always go, well, you know, it's because of Steve. It really wasn't, because we had two or three other. Steve Morris had a bass player in mind, the guy from that plays with Blue Oyster Cult right now.
Yeah.
You know, we had him in mind. But once you started playing, again, Rich and I were just going, that's the guy.
Well, and a great set of pipes doesn't hurt either.
Yeah, that didn't hurt.
I personally think it's the fact that I could sing as well as play bass, because I've never been, you know, there's bass players all over the boat on this particular that could blow my shorts off, but, you know, not a lot of singing bass players. I think that's been my ticket to get the gig in front of somebody that was a better bass player, is the fact that I could sing as well.
I've always been impressed with bass players who can sing, because I used to be a bass player back in the day, but I could never do both. And I remember going to interview Paul McCartney and Jack Bruce and saying the same thing. And for that, at the time, those two were the big ones for me, and both of those. And Billy's probably the same as well.
Oh, you think, very much so.
I'm watching the left hand, and I'm thinking, God, he's singing that as well. And McCartney's very good at that, as is Jack Bruce, God bless him. He was very good at that. So yeah, you're amongst the few, I have to say. So
it was the whole package with Bill.
Yeah. Rich.
And he was so handsome. Yeah.
Since Ronnie came into the band, there has been almost a renewed energy, and the band have been playing a lot of gigs. That the gig count has gone up considerably. This must be a reflection of how you guys must all feel. I mean, and so we want to go out and we want to play this music. Is that right?
I've always just loved making records is great, and looking back on a wonderful career is great. But really, the joy is in the doing. I mean, looking at the tour in front of you and being excited because you got, you know, we're playing tonight somewhere. We're kind of blue collar workers in that way, so we actually like the work. That's the joy, I think, of being a musician, if you're a virtuoso or somebody that just tries to keep up like me. It's actually just the work that is fun. And you have to sign up for all of it. You know, it's the travel, it's the away from family, it's the bad food on the road, being sick. It's like being in the circus, but you fall in love with it. And it becomes, you know, your entire life. I signed up for all of it a long time ago, not just the good parts, but all of it.
Well, of course, musicians always need an audience, and thankfully, and this is a very small selection of them, but you guys seem to have done very well over the years, and for that, we are all grateful, I must say. Any more questions out there? Okay, Tyler, this guy here. There you go.
I had the good fortune to see you folks in 1974 on your first West Coast tour in San Diego, opening for the Kinks. And I have to believe it was a real revelation for you to play in front of a group that big, having been basically a bar band up to that point. What was it like to finally go out on the road with a professional setup on a tour of such magnitude? comparatively.
And the Kinks were a band that we grew up playing in high school, playing a lot of Kinks songs. And so, wow, this is the big time. And the most memorable thing that I, for me was, oh, one that's kind of funny, but was how much they fought, the Davis Brothers. I mean, screaming and fighting and just constantly bickering. They did not get along at all. And yeah, that's right here. That has, things haven't changed. I had a moment that I will see on my deathbed right before I go, I'm sure, which we were playing with the Kinks on that tour. We were playing In the Round at the Century Theater in Phoenix. And I only have one eye and no depth perception, and the stage is spinning. We walked on from this hole over here, but when it stopped, the hole was actually over there. And so, this is awesome. Holding the guitar, and I just walked right off the stage. But fortunately, I landed on my feet, didn't break the guitar, and I didn't know what to do, so I just kept walking. I walked right up out to the top. If there would have been a janitor's closet up there, I would have just gone in and stayed. I can remember turning
around. It's safe to come out now, Rich.
I remember turning and looking over at the band is kind of at the white. They're just. And that'll be the last thing on my deathbed before I got it out.
It's funny, actually, that you mentioned the Kinks and anyone who's worked in the business. And God love them. I do love Ray and Dave, but. There's that famous quote, isn't there? And somebody says, you hate your brother. And Ray goes, no, I love him. I just can't stand to be in the same postcode as him sometimes, is it? But they really are. And I wish them the best. I hope they manage to get something together this year. But it must have been great for you guys playing with the Kinks, having played some of their songs. And I guess it might have been a little tarnished having seen it up front. But, yeah, they're an interesting couple. There you go. That's brothers, though, you know? It's sometimes that's the way it is. I know that's like that with my brothers. So it's obviously a familial thing. David, lighting and then on stage, different perception really, isn't it? I mean, how was the first gig for you? Only you played the songs, is at the back of your mind going, right, we're going to move to that now, light this. I mean, it's kind of insider knowledge really, isn't it?
Well, you can't help but notice, but... When I first joined the band, I got a friend of mine that I'd worked with before that I knew could completely handle the lighting and put it in Scott's hands and was able to completely forget about lighting and put all my eggs in this basket. And it's been a blast. It's been like a dream for the last 2.5 years, and this experience on this ship with all the Prague royalty everywhere and being involved and being a part of that is really feels like I'm dreaming. I have to pinch myself all the time. And all I can say is, you know, if you play, don't ever stop. Keep doing it because, you know, you never know what can happen.
It's almost, I mean, really, it's a bit of a cliche, but it's almost fairy tale, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It all kind of started, I'd been fired from a bartending job. And Billy, who I'd been working with, writing songs and recording back in the 80s, he called me. He says, hey, we're going to do this 3-week reunion tour. Can you do lights and, you know, tune guitars and set keyboards? Sure. So that 3-week reunion tour, here I am. So
one thing I wanted to say, too, and the last time Steve Walsh and I talked before he moved on, was he gave Dave his blessing and said that, you know, Dave Mannion needs to be the keyboard player for Kansas. So it was great that Steve Walsh said that.
I guess that's what you call, I mean, it's passing the torch on, though, isn't it? It was good to hear.
It was pretty awesome, because I had worked with Steve over the years as well. I worked with him on his Glossolalia album, recording that, and... That was just quite an experience, actually. So, it was awesome. When Steve first announced his retirement to us, I'm like, oh, my God. got to find a new gig. What's going to happen? And then I sent Phil an email, and the reply was good. So,
well, that was well then as well. Any more questions? Tyler, can we come over this side maybe? Or maybe down here, this gentleman here wearing a very fine Kansas T-shirt. This guy here from second row, that guy there.
Hi guys, I'm Tim from Australia.
G'day.
You know, I love the new album, and I think it's got the widest songwriting the band's ever had. I'd just like to know a bit more about how it's all come along, how it's all come together with the writing, who's done the writing, and how you put it together.
Well, when I joined the band, you know, everyone was looking for material, so there were a bunch of songs. You know, I bothered Phil for years, too. I managed to get his fax number in 2001 and sent him...
What's a fax?
Yeah, exactly. I sent him a fax and said, and I told him who I was, and I wanted to be in the band, and I had material, and I left my phone number, and I just never expected to hear from the guy, and that night, my phone rang, and this voice on the other end said, can I talk to Zach? And I said, this is Zach, and he said, this is Phil from Kansas, and I said, no, it's not. I did. I didn't believe it. So I started sending Phil material years ago in the hopes that Kansas would do another record. And there were four songs that eventually became Visibility Zero, Rhythm of the Spirit, 818, and Camouflage. But the band never made a record, and everything just sat on ice. And then when Phil and I talked a couple of years ago about doing the new record, he said, hey, do you still have those songs lying around? And I said, yeah. So, and then, you know, we needed more material, so... For me, as a Kansas fan since I was 15, like Rich was talking about how there's a great variety on every Kansas album. That's what I thought. I thought, okay, well, there's got to be a shuffle. We've got to have the big halftime thing. And then Phil would send me beats. Phil comes up with these crazy beats, like the opening of With This Heart, which is like an 11-8. That was Phil. Phil came up with that and sent it to me. And I was like, okay, this could work, you know. And then we had a couple of songs from outside writers as well that we worked on and made them Kansas. But, you know, even for me, all the stuff I brought in, it doesn't really sound like Kansas until it goes through the mill. Kansas is like a mill. And once everyone starts playing, then all of a sudden it's like, oh yeah, wow, this is cool. So we all, you know, we put it all together.
Okay.
Get this gentleman back here in the white shirt.
We saw you in Milwaukee a few months ago. It was awesome. I'm just wondering, between gigs, you know, what do you do in the downtime? And did you have a favorite restaurant?
What downtime?
Where was your favorite place to eat on this last tour?
Good question. Backwards,
there's a real nice Taco Bell down the street from Milwaukee Pep's Theater.
Billy and Rags, it's Cracker Barrel anywhere.
Oh, R. Thomas in Atlanta. That is an awesome restaurant.
You should do the Kansas Good Food Guide. That might be an option. It's like an income stream. Okay, we've got time for one more question. Tyler, there's a guy down here in the middle of the row with a kind of reddish, brownish t-shirt. There you go. Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you so much. My question's for Phil. Very distinctive drum beats that you come up with, and the way any prog band tends to handle time signatures kind of affects their overall sound, and I was just wondering if you could describe your process, or what about it makes it so distinctive and unique, because, again, it's totally you, I think. Thank you.
Actually, there is no process. I hate to pop the bubble, but... I'm self-taught. You know, I've never taken any lessons. I lived in very odd places like the Philippines and Japan, and where there weren't really any opportunities for me to really learn how to play the instrument. So I taught myself in such a way that my good friend Rod Morgenstein told me one time, whatever you do, don't take any lessons. He said, you know, the way you play the drums is so distinct, stay with that. Well, I didn't know that. I just sat by the radio like the rest of these guys or whatever and learned how to play the instrument. I mean,
many of these guys are schooled and know what they're doing. I have no clue. So I wish I could take, you know, credit for all the years of schooling that I've had, but, you know, Richard and I played in club bands. That's what we did. We played bars and rodeos and things like that, and here we are today. So we're really good at faking people out, really, basically. But thank you for your comment.
There is a, me and Phil and Dave played a lot of club bands together and stuff, and we're not trained at all. But when you add the element of the type of music we play now, we don't have a delicate touch. It's just something that we've never had. And we're always kind of right on the outside of our capabilities, so that it creates a unique tension where we're just trying to keep up constantly, and then you pour out more energy in doing that, and it just actually... So I think that's one thing that has set us apart from a lot of people, is we're a lot more of a rock band underneath that cut our teeth on a lot of soul music. But we really got involved in listening and playing prog music early on, and that's where our heart was, is for what we wanted to play. But our talent comes more from a rock and roll base. That we just do it the way we know how, and it just happens to work.
Well, I hope you keep doing it for a very, very long time to come. Thank you very much for your questions, ladies and gentlemen. They've been really good. We've actually run out of time. But just one final question. Phil, okay, you're on the tour now, you're on the cruise, and then you're going to be continuing touring. Looking forward to 12 months' time, where are we going to see Kansas then?
Well, we head back out on the Prelude Implicit Left Overture Tour, and we'll be doing that through the spring. And then this summer, we spend 6 weeks in Europe. So look for everybody, Scandinavia, Germany, all over Europe for 6 weeks. Then we come back, and we head back for the Prelude Implicit Left Overture Tour through the fall. And that will take us through the fall, and then the first 2 months of 2018, we do another new album.
Yeah.
And we couldn't do it without you guys.
Well, good luck with that, and please come to the UK when you're in Europe. We'd love to see you there. Ladies and gentlemen, Kansas.